Hello there, Bakeroos and Bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you today? Great to see you. Good. I'm glad you're here. Have a chair. Oh, maybe that's not a good thing. I know lots of you are listening to this while working around the bench. And so, yeah, keep your hands moving while you listen. Today on the show, I'm talking with Whitney Keatman, who is one of the owners of Sparrow Bakery in Bend, Oregon. Just little ways down the road here, a little south of me. Super excited for this talk. You're going to love it. Let me tell you, Whitney's amazing. Hey, so what else is new with you? Are you doing okay? Are you staying safe and healthy? Are you able to, bake and maybe even sell your baking? I sure hope so. Things are crazy here in Canada, let me tell you, especially like BC where I live and Ontario and Saskatchewan. This third wave COVID and all the crazy variants are rearing their ugly head. They said last night that there's more travel restrictions coming where I live in BC. Although because I'm on Vancouver Island, it's not so bad. But my goodness, the government sure like holding on to the status quo with the last fingernail that they have, I'll tell you. They wait until things get really, really bad before they make any moves. And so because they're making a move here, it tells me that, at least over in Vancouver, things are really, really bad. But we're holding on here. I actually have a vaccine appointment on Thursday, which I'm excited about. Heading down to the grocery store because they have some, so I'm going to pick up a whole roast chicken and maybe some orange juice and a COVID vaccine. Yeah, that'll be fun, Thursday afternoon. So I'm excited about that. The whole roast chicken is just in case my arm hurts afterwards, so at least I have some food. Those are the worst chickens, aren't they? But yeah, anyways, it's a bit of a joke. Hey, wanted to tell you one more thing. There is a documentary that I saw just last week. Cindy and I saw that the Victoria Film Festival, it would be on at the Vic Theater just down from where I live, and we could go sit in the theater and watch it if it wasn't for COVID. But they do a virtual theater thing. And, every week they have a couple of movies and we see and we watch quite a few and stuff and just, watch them on the laptop. And last week they advertised a show called Bread, an Everyday Miracle. So, of course, I rent that sucker right away and watched it. It's a new documentary. It's fantastic. Oh my goodness, what a good film. It's primarily set in Austria and Germany. They go to a couple bakeries in France or in Paris, and they talk a lot with the scientists at Purato's, the bakery mix and ingredient manufacturer that I believe is in Belgium. And the show's amazing because it's a contrast between artisan bakers and industrial bakers. And not the tension between them, but just the radical difference between each of them. And the main bakery that they spend a lot of time in Austria is a family-run bakery, literally mom and dad and two young men, the sons that are running the business now. And it's, third generation. And this is a very large artisan bakery, but they're doing it old school, right? But they talk about how they went down the path of mixes and, just buying bread mixes from, the big industrial suppliers and got an initial bump in sales because they're easier to do and all of that stuff. But what they realized very quickly is that they were now making exactly what was in all of the supermarkets, like exactly what was there. And they realized their business was suffering. So they went back old school and they went back to baking products, the old way with organic ingredients and that kind of thing. at the same time, the documentary's following Harry's in Germany, like the big industrial, you know, and the CEO of the company describes himself as one of the bread barons, you know, and is sort of talking about how there used to be like, you know, 40 bread barons and he knew them all. And now there's only five or six because of all this consolidation. And these guys are full on industrial bakers. And the contrast is amazing. And the film's really, really good because they don't set up the industrial bakers as being evil. They show you their world from their perspective. And then they show you the artisan bakers and the organic bakers and that kind of stuff from their perspective. And it's just there in front of you and you can see it. And so for someone like me, I'm looking at the industrial stuff and going, oh my God, this is crazy. Like this is not baking that I want to have any part of. But these aren't evil people. I think it's just they're just seeing it as, you know, consumers want what they want and we're here to provide what they want in quantity at a very cheap price. And they just kind of discount the whole artisan baker movement. like it's just, it's, you know, 5% of the market wants organic. We're here to serve 95% of the market and do it in grocery stores. And so they talk about, you know, par baking and all of that stuff. And it's wild. Nothing that I've seen in a very long time has got me more committed to the artisan baking movement and this idea of small, independently owned, family run small businesses in each community serving the good stuff for the people. That being said, watching the folks work in this Austrian bakery that is, you know, quite a large setup, even with, you know, just rooms of bulk retarding dough and then, you know, they've got automatic dividers and that kind of stuff, and then they're hand shaping a bunch of things and, you know, and they're checking each mix and that. It's amazing. So it just shows me, like, right now we're looking at bakeries. So this show, I think, attracts bakeries, everything from, you know, the solo micro baker working out of, you know, sometimes their basement, sometimes their home kitchen, sometimes a backyard bakery, that kind of a thing, up to, you know, retail bakeries and smaller wholesale bakeries, you know, to something like, I don't know, you know, Jim at Seven Stars that had, you know, 100 employees or Whitney that we're going to talk to today, you know, that's got 100 employees and they've got three locations now. And all of that, you know, even the biggest baker or the biggest bakery owner, well, not physically biggest, the owner of the biggest bakery that I've interviewed on this show and I think of as being like a big operation is just tiny, tiny, tiny compared to the actual industrial, you know, fully automated bakeries. And so it just shows to me the huge opportunity for the smaller guys to just go under the radar of all of this massive industrial scale stuff and make good products for specific people and have a connection with your customers and make a living doing it and not, like, it doesn't have to be this massive elite thing with $12 loaves and I'm going to make the most complicated loaf of bread I can make or, you know, that kind of a thing. There's just so much room. There's so much space before you get to the industrial scale that, I don't know, I just found it exciting. I really did. And it just got me thinking and got my whole, I don't know, my whole imagination going again about, you know, oh yeah, how would that go? How would that work? What could we set up? And so, yeah, so I really encourage you to go watch the show. It's called Bread and Everyday Miracle. I'm going to put a link to the trailer in the show notes of this episode, but seek it out. You know, we got it through the Victoria Film Festival, so I'm sure it's available where you live, but it's going to take a little bit of work to find, but it's well worth it. it's fantastic. And it will show you a myriad of possibilities. All right, then. Whitney Keatman. Here we go. Whitney is one of the co-owners of Sparrow Bakery in Bend, Oregon. And I have some friends down there, and there's some folks that listen to the show in Oregon. And over the past few months, they've been saying, you know, you really need to talk to these folks. You really need to talk to these folks. We have some great bakeries down here. And so it's like, yeah, okay. And so I did. So I reached out to the folks at Sparrow, and Whitney said, yeah, I'd love to talk to you. And we had a great, great chat. You're going to hear it. It's a miracle to me how over Zoom and in these isolated times, you can just both get on the computer, look at pictures of each other, and have, you know, just a warm, fun, entertaining conversation. And I really think we have that here. I learned a lot about what they're doing, and I learned a lot about how they're doing it. And I'm excited to share it with you. So here we go. Whitney Keatman, Sparrow Bakery in Bend, Oregon, and also Portland.
Oh, it's nice to meet you.
Yeah, great to meet you as well. I'm really excited about this, actually. I live in Victoria, BC now, right up on the island, and I have a long-distance love affair with the Pacific Northwest, like Washington and Oregon and into Northern California and stuff. And so a listener of the show reached out and said, hey, you know, you need to talk to these folks in Bend. And I was like, Bend, Oregon? Yeah, I'll totally talk to some folks in Bend, Oregon. Yeah. So, and then I started digging into your bakery and that. I was like, oh my gosh, it's an amazing looking place. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. So,
So I guess I should probably ask right up front about, so how are things these days with COVID and all? Are you still managing?
Yeah.
Hard to believe it's been a year.
I know. Yeah. In fact, right before I got on this call with you, I was writing a letter to my staff, kind of like a 1 year letter, because tomorrow is the 12th. And that was the day that I wrote the first letter to our staff about what was going to happen. And it's funny because when I was writing the letter, I remember feeling, I almost felt a little like paranoid and foolish at that moment. Because we shouldn't know how big of a deal it was going to be, but in general, we've always been a pretty like cautious company when it comes to this type of thing, especially like health safety type of stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, better safe than sorry. So we started talking about it pretty early and trying to prepare people. But the other thing that we did in March actually of last year was, I run the company with myself and my wife, and we also run it with an operations manager. And so it's kind of a three-person team up at the top. And we immediately, probably the moment we stopped writing that letter and pressed send, we sat down and sort of started to brainstorm really creative ideas. We're kind of wild card idea type of people.
Yeah.
We don't like to take things sitting down, and and so we came up with a list of ideas of ways that we could creatively sort of continue to do business during the pandemic and save the jobs
and
save the business. And so one of the main things that we did was we came up with a home delivery service, because we're already a wholesaler, and so we own and run two little Nissan vans.
Gotcha. Every
7 days a week. And so we came up with a home delivery plan and wrote a website and got it up on the internet pretty quick, I think before April, and started to drive. We take orders the day before and then drive your order to your house 7 days a week. And it's not the only thing that saved us for sure, but it was a big one.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're doing okay.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You know, I've got a friend out in Minnesota that he started as a subscription bakery, was a retail bakery last March. And so he was able to shift back into subscription really quick. And it was like about a 6 week dip before subscriptions were carrying them again. And he never had to cut anyone's hours and stuff. And it was like this miracle, right? But it was like, it's been a year. Like, no, like when I was hearing that, you know, well, this could go into 2021 or 2022. And I'm like, yeah, you know, come on, that's a bit of gloom and doom, right? And it's like, and here we are a year in, and it's great to hear that you're still going, and you're still going well and figured it out, because that's a lot of adapting.
I know. We're a company that has had a lot of adversity, I would say.
Yeah.
And so we're we're not pessimists by any means, but we're always kind of trying to prepare for the worst case scenario. Better to be prepared and stare it in the face, I think.
Yeah.
Not take it sitting down and be in control and be a little bit more in the driver's seat, you know, like that's just how we run our business, is try to make lemonade.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's, I hear what you're saying, that when I had my retail bakery, just the things that were not in my control would drive me crazy. You know, it was just like, releasing, right? So I can't just do what I want to do in the building and stuff. And so now, you know, I'm out in BC, we're renting an apartment, and now I'm really losing it, right? Like, the number of times I either scald myself or freeze in the shower because the bloody water temperature is not right. And I'm like, I've got my tools, I'm going to bust in here and fix this up, right? Well, you're not allowed to do that. And it's like, but you're right. It's like, you need to keep, it's not being pessimistic to be aware of what's going on around you, you know, mm-hmm. and just be, yeah. it's preparation.
Yeah. So it's
good for you. Yeah. Well, and am I right in that this is year 15 now? This is a pretty big deal.
In August, David, the operations manager, David Boyer, he always says, we're in our 15th year. We earned it before it's even the anniversary. But yeah, it is. It's our 15th year. We started, I was really young when we started the bakery. We opened a week after my 24th birthday.
Oh my gosh.
I know. There's been a little bit of adversity. I think, well, the truth is that every small business owner faces a lot of adversity.
Oh, sure. Oh,
And insecurity, and challenges. And, I think that when I was that young, when I was so young, I was always feeling the first couple of years, I was always feeling like someone was going to come knock on the door of the bakery and tell us we couldn't do it anymore. I think I felt like a little, like not a fraud isn't quite the right word, but, I didn't feel, the first year or so, I didn't feel like I'd quite earned it, because I was so young, although I was earning it in hours and hard work and struggle and stuff. But, and we also worked out of this, our original bakery, which is still open, is more than 100 years old. And it was an old bank, for the mill. And it's not a facility that's set up for food service in any way, shape or form, but it kind of got grandfathered in as a bakery, because it was so old and we didn't do anything major to it, but I was always sort of afraid someone was going to come in and say, actually, you can't do food service here, or something like that. And back then too, it wouldn't have taken much financially to sink us. And so I think that some of the stuff that we've learned, most of the hard stuff we've faced has happened since those first 2 years. But I think it was the first 2 years that really taught me and taught us that it's, there's really no unsolvable problem. I think it was about year two where I woke up one day and I said, you know what? There really hasn't been anything that's come our way that we haven't been able to solve.
Right.
And then sort of from that day forward, that was a philosophy that the company adopted. And we say it all the time. I say it every week, you know, my employees are just like, oh God, eye roll. But it feels really true. It does. And it's an approach that we've kind of taken, my wife and I have taken kind of into our life, our personal life. There really isn't an unsolvable problem if you're creative enough and if you're willing to work for it. And if you have kind of the support and backing of the people that work for you that's kind of how we run our business.
Well, so then why at age 24 are you like, okay, I'm going to open up a bakery? Like where did that come from?
Right. Yeah. So, I went to college, to be a teacher and I got an English major and double major in English and teaching. And I was going to be a high school teacher. And then, I went and taught like one class of high school English as a practicum. And I was just like, oh my God, this is not going to work. I'm 2 or 3 years older than some of these kids. And it also, the school I went to kind of scared you straight about teaching a little bit. It's not very rewarding and the hours aren't great. And, you know, people won't appreciate the work you're doing and all this stuff. And so then I went and kind of ran in the other direction and where the hours are still not that great. And, you know, the appreciations can be, you know, limited. But it's a very satisfying job.
Sure.
And the community does appreciate us. And I'm so thankful that this is where I ended up. But how I got there was graduated from college. Got a job at a bakery in Portland, Ken's Artisan Bakery. And especially now, so that he has the cookbook, the flour, flour, water, yeast, probably mixing.
Probably got salt in there. Yeah.
That's what it is. I didn't have a super long tenure at Ken's, but I was just in that mode of learning. I just graduated from college. I was really into observing and learning. I just learned how to become a teacher. So all of that stuff was pretty turned on for me.
Yeah.
And kind of watching how he did his business. And simultaneously, my partner at the time worked at the competing French bakery in the neighborhood, which was called Saint Honoré's. So that is a French-owned French bakery. Ken's is an American-owned French bakery. So we were doing so much of the same thing at the same time and comparing notes. And it was really fascinating year. And then he said, let's move to Bend and do this for ourselves. And I said, you're crazy, like expletive crazy, you know? But he was pretty convincing. And the snow's really good over here. So we moved to Bend and this is where we opened our bakery. A little less at the time, you know, it was sort of the early 2000s and Portland was starting to really kind of blossom. The food scene was really starting to kind of blossom in Portland. We realized we just didn't have enough money to open something there and that the competition was going to be pretty steep. I mean, it's hard to sign up to compete against Ken, you know, Ken's bakery. That wasn't really something I was interested in doing. So that's why we moved to Bend, is the food scene was really new here.
Well, and it's goofy. Like I don't know Ken at all, but I certainly know from my own experience as a stressed out bakery owner that, folks working for me, wanting to open up their own place one day was amazing. Come on in for sure. Opening it up three blocks over, maybe not so much, but it's sort of like you can build a lot of allies saying, I'm just moving an hour down the road. Right. You know, that, Well, and so I've only been through Oregon once. I was fleeing, from San Francisco. And so I went straight through to Portland on the freeway. So you're more inland. And you said snow. So are you up in the mountains a bit more or closer to?
Yeah, Bend is, it's considered the high desert. And okay. It's pretty much right in the heart of the state. They call it Central Oregon.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have really good skiing.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. That's, and we're a tourist town. You know, it used to be a lumber town. But in the 70s and 80s, it kind of switched. It made that big transitional switch that so much of the country did. And it's a big tourism town because of the mountain, and then a lot of resorts, like really great weather, and namely really, really good access to hundreds of miles of trail and the outdoors and nice. Public land. So yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I just talked to two women in the high desert of Colorado that very similar thing. They came to it from mountain biking, and it was like, okay, now we need food. Okay. And they've been there 15 years or 20 years now, that kind of thing. Oh yeah. That's so cool. It's a beautiful country out this way. It really, really is. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I've been up near you. I went out to, one of the first years that I've been to Victoria, but then also one of the first years we were open, we used to always close for the month of January because we were working so darn hard. And so one of those years we went up to Canada and went to Salt Spring Island.
Oh, sure.
Checked out all the artisans that were there, and it was super inspiring.
It's lovely. Yeah, it really is. We since I've been out here, we've been up there once. We went over once last fall, but again, pre-pandemic, I don't go anywhere now where there's other people. But yeah, well, okay. So you've already answered like my two big questions is like, how did you get into this, but also why Bend and that kind of thing. So that's pretty cool. And then, so you're working in a place that shouldn't really be a bakery. And then you've now got a second place. And so I'm curious a little bit about how you set that up in that are you baking out of both locations, or did you just set up a new place and go from there?
This is a good question. So in fact, we actually run three cafes.
Oh.
We're a regional bakery. We're not just in Bend, and we have our largest facility is a production facility.
Okay.
But kind of like how we got there is, you know, kind of a piecemeal story of, I think that we have designed and built and run no fewer than seven facilities.
Really?
We just are really good at outgrowing our space, you know, and for a long time we were really into, you know, let's rent this kind of run down place, fix it up a bit, you know, let the community kind of reinvest in this building. But the problem with that, of course, is that it's usually small. It's usually a little run down, and it doesn't suit your needs forever. It works really well when you're growing, but yeah, our production facility right now is about 3,300 square feet, but it's our third production facility. So, we have started expanding since the second year, I think, we were in business. The big major one was, so we opened in 2006, and then in 2014 was the year that we opened our second cafe.
Right.
And our original bakery is very small. We're talking like European small. There's only, you know, in when the dining room is open, which is not right now, you know, there's three or four tables.
Yeah.
It's so tight that the whole interior is closed right now, and we sell out of a booth that's attached to sort of the back door so that people don't have to come in. It's just not safe enough. But when we opened our second cafe, what we really wanted to do was we really wanted to give the people of Bend more of a retail experience, which is what they always wanted anyway. There's never a table available.
Gotcha.
The original bakery, you know, we've got a nice big patio down there, but there's never a place to sit. And the people of Bend are really supportive of our brand and our company, and they always wanted to participate more. So 2014, we opened a much larger dining room. There's seating for over 40 in our dining room. We call it Sparrow Northwest because it's in the Northwest Crossings neighborhood of Bend. Kind of a newer neighborhood. And when we opened, you know, that's just right after the recession, more or less. And so Northwest Crossings had been having a hard time filling the leases on the main commercial strip that they had built within a residential neighborhood. And we were so lucky we got a corner lease. And we, you know, we've become sort of a placemaker along that street, and now everything's leased, you know, and it is a whole different experience to run a retail bakery in a neighborhood, because The original bakery is in an industrial area, and it's very different, you know. So very fulfilling. It was, we opened there about 2 weeks before our twins were born.
Okay.
So I was 8 months pregnant, and it was a challenge for sure for Jess and I, but became a lot more challenging when we were then like hauling around a couple of kind of sickly preemies, you know, all over the place. So that was a hard year for sure. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have got so much respect for folks that like you that will start a family, raise a family while they're working, expanding the business and that kind of thing. Like I never even thought about it until our kids were in high school, kind of a deal, right? Or that was sort of the, I wanted them working. I didn't want them sitting, like, you know, so it was like, it was all hands on deck. And so, you know, the stories of folks like you that it's like, yeah, well, we're going to have kids and we're going to expand at the same time. Like it's gotta be tough, you know, like it can't not be tough. Right. Like that's
the whole young and dumb thing though.
Because
I was only 24 and kids weren't even in, you know, in the picture. And I had a partner back then and stuff. So
yeah,
15 years is a long time and things can evolve. And you definitely get to the point where you say, oh, wait, we got to have kids. Otherwise that opportunity is going to pass us by.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
It's been pretty, they're six now and they, it's been pretty fun and a real source of pride to run the business sort of in a way with them, because our third cafe is in Portland.
Okay.
And we opened it this summer.
This summer?
In the middle of the pandemic.
Holy crow.
With our kids, with our boys. So, and you know, that was a really special experience too. We signed that lease in the late summer of 2019 before any of us could even dream of what was about to happen.
Yeah.
And we started, you know, we broke ground in February of 2020, again, before anybody knew of anything. And then, you know, we stopped construction for a while because we were pretty confused on what was happening and you know, do we need to break this lease, you know, is there even going to be food service anymore? I don't know, you know. And ultimately we decided that we just needed to give it a go. And so we did. And we distribute, so it's a cafe, but it's also a wholesale bakery, and that's really helping. We have some really good relationships in Portland with, we're the pastry provider for Stumptown Coffee, which is a pretty famous coffee roastery, from Portland. And then, pretty early on got a really nice, relationship going with, a independently owned and run, little chain of high end grocery stores.
Okay.
Zupan's Market. And so the wholesale arm of it is what keeps us in the black in Portland and in Bend, honestly, right now, you know, especially grocery stores, you know, because those sales haven't gone down, they've only gone up. So, yeah.
So cool. Well, and so how, I guess, how do you, or what do you do? What's your kind of role now? Like when you've got all of these things on the go, it's got to be different than, you know, it's the two of us around the bench in the first place.
Yeah. 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 It's been, those roles have really been kind of meted out and figured out in the last couple of years for myself and my wife. And now we've got the operations manager. I run the HR department. We have a little over 100 employees. but for us, for the company, HR is, we say, and this is probably my fault, but we say we're a teaching company. Right. And it's partially because there's not a very big labor pool in Bend. And so it would be really uncommon for me to hire someone with baking experience. And so really early on, we realized that we would need to teach people how to bake. And so it opens up some opportunities for us. It means that we can hire someone that has other attributes that are attractive, you know, like especially socially, for example, like this person is going to be a good teammate, you know, and be someone that other people want to be around. Let's teach that person how to bake, you know. Not crazy about big egos or, you know, arrogance or just general, you know, jerks. So, so that's a way that we've been able to cultivate culture. And so I do a lot of the people part of the business. Right. And, for us, we really say that we are an employee-focused company. I think that that's actually something that I learned when I was working at Ken's and at some other bakeries was, I think that I was a little bit intimidated. Ken is, he is after the perfection of bread.
Right.
And consistency. And I was a little intimidated by that. I thought, well, you know, I'm never going to probably be known for being the perfect French bakery. Like that always felt like an impossible goal for me. And then pretty early on, I realized that I was much more satisfied by creating good jobs and teaching people how to bake, but also how to become a worker, you know, in the workforce, how to, you know, increase their value and their self-satisfaction, you know, the satisfaction with their job and things like that. That was so much more satisfying to me than trying to create the perfect product.
Right. Yeah.
And so at the bakery, we're a little different, you know, like the food must be high quality and I want my people to do their best.
Yeah.
But it definitely has a handmade quality to it. And that's because we literally hand laminate everything, and that's something else we can talk about. But the very process itself means that our products are somewhat imperfect.
Yeah.
But that works so well for our company because I don't want my staff to be focused on being perfect or the perfection of the thing. It's more than that for this company, you know, and the pursuit of perfection, it just isn't satisfying enough for me. And I don't think for most people, in work. So it attracts this kind of employee.
Yeah. Well, and it's that kind of, what's that Japanese term, like the wabi-sabi kind of thing that says, you know, there's some that imperfection or that uniqueness is what brings a lot of beauty to the thing. And I always find it's more approachable for the kind of customers that I wanted to have that, you know, I used to get compliments about our bread that it all, you know, it looked the same. You know, to the end, not to me, not to any of the crew, but you know, to anyone coming in, oh, it just all looks so perfect, right? Yeah. But it was that it was handmade, it was handcrafted, and that told a different story than the perfection of a Parisian patisserie, right? You know, like when I went to Paris once, it was like, okay, this is a whole other level, but it doesn't hold my interest in the same way that I can imagine your place would, right? Like, cause it's just attracts a different type of person, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. The kind of folks I want to hang out with.
Yeah.
But, I read a bit about your signature product, or at least as of the ocean roll,
yeah,
which sounded amazing, but kind of ties in, right? So you've got like a cardamom roll, but it's laminated dough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
right there, you've got some built-in imperfection opportunities, right? Like you're not going to just get everyone just so.
Yeah. Yeah. The ocean roll, I mean, it's definitely like, you know, again, like David Boyer sometimes says, you know, people come in the door for the ocean roll, but they come back because of the service, you know,
yeah.
Like,
oh, of course. Yeah.
Sometimes it's our one trick pony, and it is pretty well known regionally, you know, certainly in town and regionally. And, it's just that product that, you know, right when we were kind of coming up with the concept of the business and things like that, my dad said, you know, you guys need to have a signature product. You know, when I was growing up, it was this like huge cinnamon roll that my dad, and it was one cinnamon roll for the whole family. We bought it from this Jewish deli called Roses in Portland, and one cinnamon roll fed the whole family. And it was like, that was their signature as a bakery, you know, not maybe as a deli, but, and so he said, you got to have a really great cinnamon roll. And I said, well, Dad, but like everybody's done cinnamon rolls, mm-hmm. you know? And so we did, we really pushed ourselves to come up with a product that was unique to us and that would be distinct, because being distinctive in business is really how you succeed.
Yeah.
And so we knew that we had a really good croissant dough recipe, and then we kind of subbed out the cinnamon for fresh ground cardamom. And
yeah, sure.
And it also is a little bit of a nod to, you know, I have Finnish heritage and that sort of Scandinavian style of baking, which I think works really well in a mountain town.
Sure.
And so hence the ocean roll is born. But but it really has, you know, like I think that the success of that product and what makes it truly distinctive, it's the hand lamination, you know. Looking through your podcast list, I mean, I'm overwhelmed by how little I know about the hundreds and hundreds of other bakers in the world.
Isn't that cool though? Yeah.
So cool and so overwhelming at the same time. But, you know, we are hand laminating, and I think, although I haven't done a ton of research, I think we have to be one of the larger operations on the West Coast that's doing this much hand lamination.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm surprised to hear you say that, because, you know, the folks that I know that were still hand rolling are, you know, one shop, one small shop. I don't do a lot of stuff, and I'm wondering where I'm going to put the sheeter.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're a distributor, we're becoming a regional distributor, and we're still doing it by hand. It all goes back to that, to 2006. You know, when we first were setting up that teeny tiny bakery in that old, you know, kind of falling apart building, we didn't have space for a laminator, and we have money for a laminator.
Yeah.
That was a very easy decision in 2006. But then like in 2008, or say like 2014, when we opened up our second cafe, and we had to make that decision again and again, because there was a point where we could afford the laminator, and there was a point where we had plenty of room for it. We could design it into the next bakery. But we really decided that this was something that we were going to stick with, and this was going to be what made our bakery distinctive. Because when you are laminating something by hand, you need to understand the process so much better, but it also is so much more difficult to be consistent. It is so much easier to be imperfect. and so it does kind of lend itself to my philosophy for my business anyway. You know, it humbles my bakers every day, yeah. Both the ones that are doing the laminating and then the ones that are working with the final product. It's it's not as consistent as it would be if it was coming out of a sheeter. But we're sticking with it. And we have a whole team of laminators that just laminate dough, yeah, 7 days a week, you know, 364 days a year, you know? Wow. And, so it's kind of become our thing.
Yeah. Cool. So neat. Well, and I love the story, like growing up in Saskatchewan, when we opened up our place, we said, well, everyone's like, well, when are you going to make cinnamon buns? But the Saskatchewan cinnamon buns, same thing. We used to say they were always big as a baby's head. Like that was the thing, you know, and it's like, well, we're not doing that. No, we didn't do laminated dough, but we would make like a brioche dough with some lemon zest in it. And then we're going to make a nice, tight, really nice cinnamon bun. And it's still my favorite, which thank goodness, cause we made a lot of them, but the first, you know, I think the first time we started putting them out there and they weren't this gargantuan thing, you know, turned a few heads and then people got into it. You know, we actually went the other way. We went super small. You could get a little foil pack with a dozen mini buns in it. So, you know, when you think just a little foil package and they were just little tiny bite-sized things. And we used to make a bunch of those and folks would pick them up to take them to work because it was a nice tear and share snack thing. Nice. Back when you could eat food at work. But yeah, and yeah, it's funny that having those signature things is a big deal, you know. Mm. It really is. Well, and so I'm very curious just hearing you talk, Whitney, about like you've really got a good business head from what I can hear, you know, but and yet your background of, okay, I'm going to go through education and then I'm going to open up my own place and we'll figure it out as we go. But then, you know, I don't talk to a lot of bakers that are kind of thinking about, all right, here's what I need to do with 100 employees and dare I say, come at it from the point of view that this is something I like to do, right? You know, like usually it's like, oh, I got to do it. And, you know, I'd rather be at the bench or whatever. So like, how did you kind of get your business chops? Was it all just learned as you go, or did you get some help along the way as well?
Gosh, it really is like 99% self-taught.
Yeah. Wow.
Like a kind of like that constant feedback loop of like, whoops, that didn't work. You know, like we've made a lot of mistakes, yeah, but we are never afraid to learn. We're never afraid to admit them and learn from them.
Right.
You know? And, Jess and I have taken a couple classes, but the learn as you go, I don't know. I think it frees you up to think creatively about the decisions that you're going to make and really rely on your own intelligence and experience with your own business to make some of those decisions. In the last couple of years, we've used a financial advisor, and I have learned a lot from him, and he has sort of seen how the bakery has gone from small to medium and is coaching Jess and I more on how to be smart with that, you know, and because we probably both are still working much more than we want to and really should be, you know. And so how do you turn what has become a pretty successful business into something that starts to work a little bit better for you and for your family, so you don't squander the opportunity to be with your wife and to be with your kids,
yeah,
and yourself, you know. Yeah. So that's kind of where we're going right now. But yeah,
But that's a sign of maturity of like personal, but also like sort of business maturity, right? Because when you're in that first phase, it's just not on.
You know,
I had my retail bakery for 5 years and we never got to that phase, you know, like we were getting closer, you know, for sure. If we'd have gone seven, we'd have got there, or, you know, lit a match, but we probably would have got there. But you know, because you could kind of see it. But there were some. But I think that's. I think you just raised a really good point. That I just wanted to reflect back this idea of being willing to try new things, being willing to learn from things. You don't want the outcome to be bad, but it's like it might be, and we're going to learn from it and stuff. And it takes that takes a lot of discipline too, right? To just be willing to try it, see how it goes, and then not, you know, throw things if it doesn't work, right? You know, or not like it's not the end of the world. We'll try something else, you know. And it's that's a skill in and of itself, or that mindset is a positive mindset for this kind of work.
That definitely takes courage.
Yeah.
To go at your business that way. But I do think that I see small business owners coming up against walls that they are really struggling to get beyond.
Yeah.
And I, you know, for better or worse, we continue with that motto of like, there are no unsolvable problems. If you can be creative enough about the solution, and really work for it, then you can keep that business going,
yeah.
You know? It's hard because the personal sacrifice, you know, just like you and your wife and the kids, you know,
I
felt it. I think that, I've missed every opportunity to say, actually, you know what? Let's just close this business down and I'll become a pastry chef in San Francisco or something like that. You know, it's not all of those. I have passed up every single one of those opportunities and instead just dug deeper, you know?
Yeah. But it's a lot of those blocks or a lot of those constraints that folks have, a lot of them are real and a lot of them are self-imposed, right? And so if you can keep that attitude of, if you can keep that narrative of, we're going to try things, we're going to learn, we're going to, you know, it helps. You know, a lot of the coaching that I do outside of baking, it's helping people tell the difference between what's reality and what's a story that you're telling yourself that you can't do this thing or this thing is impossible or, you know, who says it's sort of like the who is actually coming into that first location to say, you can't run a bakery here. Right. You know, it's like, oh no, it's just in my dreams. Yeah, nobody's saying that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a powerful asset if you're in control of it, and it's a powerful negative if you're not, right?
So
yeah tough. I find that part of how people think to be fascinating, and yet it's never easy when it's you. You know, it's always easier when it's the person that you're watching, right? So
it helps if your team has the same attitude.
Yeah.
You know, I think that like what my wife Jess really brings to the business is she's certainly more courageous than I am, you know, and she is usually holding me up more often than the other way around. But the little things that get to a lot of people just don't really get to her, you know. Nice. She's kind of eternally positive, and David is the same way too, you know, like he really does not see any roadblock. And whenever one of us has that moment of weakness where you say, well, I don't really know, like we're really struggling with labor right now. You know, there's not really enough folks to work or who are ready to come back to work or, mm-hmm. or whatnot. And, when David's, you know, faces something like that, he you know, he'll say, you know, no, we got this. And so, you know, and the three person team has worked even better really than the two person team, you know. There's always a tiebreaker, but it also just means that generally speaking, when one person is low, the other two are not, and they can lift them up, you know.
So it's a lot of pressure. And I was going to ask about that because I know in my case, it's hard when your life partners are your only business partner, because the pressure's on to not both have a bad day at the same time, right? Because
right.
You know, because who's there to to help you out. And we always talked about how, you know, getting a third partner in here that isn't from the family would actually be really helpful. You know, like it sort of goes against the this, whatever the myth of the family business is, but it was just to have one more person that was into it as we were, that that way, you know, because the odds are all three of us aren't going to hit the bottom at the same time, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So when did David come on board with you folks?
Yeah. So yeah, David has worked for the company for a long time. He way back in the day, let me see. So that would have been like 2008 through 2012 or so. We delivered everything by bike. And actually, when I say we, I mean, we hired a third party company that did all bike delivery.
Sure. Okay.
And that was awesome from a, you know, ecological point of view. Right.
Yeah.
And then we did get to the point where it made absolutely no sense anymore because we had 47 wholesale accounts and, you know, grocery stores and it snows here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, David Boyer, he did some of the bike delivering and okay. He would come into our business and, he just liked what he saw and he was, you know, a college educated man, but he was really after a job that it wasn't about the title. It really was just about the satisfaction that he felt doing the work. And so he was a barista for a couple of years and then him and his wife at the time moved to the East Coast so he could get his master's degree in English. And so he went through all this schooling and then like the day he graduated, or not literally, but I called him and I said, are you sure that you want to be an English professor? Because I really think you should come and move back to the West Coast and help us run this company. And he basically made the decision the next day.
Wow.
So, And you know, the divorce happened in the interim. And so he hopped into his car, I think with his mom and drove across country and came to work with us again. And that was 5 years ago. And
okay. We've
just been kind of building on that ever since. So really, again, it's about who do you want to work with and mm-hmm. who is going to, you know, lift you up and bring a particular set of skills to the job, even if those skills aren't baking,
yeah. You
know, in this case, you know, David is, he says yes to everything. He would be willing to learn anything or do anything, you know, and that type of attitude, it's so helpful. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter that he doesn't know how to bake bread, you know, he's willing to go and work that midnight shift if that is going to benefit the work that he does for the company.
Gotcha.
You know? So oh, wow. We're all just kind of, I guess, forever students or forever teachers, however you want to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, and also, good judges of people. From the sounds of it, right? Like it's nice to be in that position where it's like, you know, if you see someone that's like, I'd really like to work with this person, you can do it, you know,
right.
And or you're able to, you know, that's what I love about, you know, kind of being in business is you do get, sometimes the pressure of picking your team is hard, but there are times when it's really, really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be really rewarding. It's, you know, the employee part and the people part of the business, I have said many, many times, it is the hardest part, bar none.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite part. It's the most rewarding.
Cool.
It's both, you know.
So cool. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Awesome. Oh man. I am so happy to talk to you. I really am. It's like, well, and just, can I say I when I was doing my digging around and poking about, I saw a line in a news article about how when you and Jess got married, you kind of combined names to get a new last name. So like not a hyphen, but it's like, okay, we're going to create Keatman from our old names. I just think that's awesome. That is so cool.
The no rules philosophy.
but also I just, so with the last name of Dick, it's all kinds of problems. You know, my kids are not happy, or my daughter especially, But, you know, my wife came from, her maiden name was Shimnosky.
Yeah.
And so we never could come up with a combo that was going to work. So we just went with Dick and okay, fine. But, you know,
Shimnosky.
Yeah, exactly. And so, so when I read that, I thought, oh, that's just genius. And so, I just wanted to let you know. I just thought that was awesome.
Oh, so. Thanks. Yeah, it was, you know, we got married in 2012. So it became legal to get married in Oregon. I think it was, I mean, we missed the cutoff by like 18 months, maybe even less. And, but like the point is that like at the time it was just becoming a thing. And,
yeah.
And so we used that as an excuse to make up the rules a little bit, but sure. For ourselves personally and for our family. And then also even just for the actual, you know, event, the wedding event and things like that. So, yep, Keatman it is. And our, and now, you know, and then now we all get to have the same last name and our kids have the same last name.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. So cool. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, well, thanks so much, Whitney. I really do appreciate you taking the time here. And I say this a lot, but I truly mean it. It's like when we're allowed to cross borders again, I have a trip that I want to take to visit friends down the coast, you know, at least to Sacramento, probably further. I'm working with a woman in San Diego now, so I think I'm going all the way down. But it keeps getting longer and longer, this trip, as I meet more people. And I hope that someday soon I'm going to be able to get out and see you folks, because it sounds like you're just doing amazing stuff out there.
Well, you can drive the 97 down to San Francisco. It's only a matter of a couple hours detour off of the
outside. Oh, yeah. No. I'm not worried about detour. I'll tootle all over the state. Doesn't bother me at all. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't need it. I don't need a direct route. I just need permission to leave.
Right. Health, safety.
Yeah. I can't even get back to Saskatchewan yet, but we'll get there. But
cool.
Anyways, so thanks so much. Yeah. I really do. And I just thrilled to hear your story. Like, I really am.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, awesome. Mark.
Cool, eh? I wasn't kidding. Whitney's awesome. What a great talk. Had so much fun. So many takeaways from the conversation. I started my bakery when I was 45 years old. When we opened up Orange Boot Bakery, she started when she was 24. I think she was smart to do it then. I really do. Just great to hear the story. I'm impressed. I was surprised at how much they have going and how things that scare me don't scare them near as much. I'll put it that way. I'm not going to say Whitney is fearless, because that's not realistic, but this idea of, oh yeah, we're going to take over this place. We're going to fix it up. You know, it might even get pretty good at fixing up places and flipping them and moving to finding another place. And saying that can be something that we're, as a company, pretty good at. I thought that was neat. I thought it was neat the talk about, yeah, folks might come for the niche product or the product that we're known for, in their case, the ocean rolls, but they're going to come back because of the service and because of the people, and we can't forget that. They're not coming for the signature product. And I thought that was a really cool lesson too. And so, yeah, start soon enough when you don't realize how crazy it is to start. I thought that was, yeah, good advice there too. So great chat. And I'm thrilled to meet her and can't wait to get down to Bend and check it out for sure. So if you're in the Bend, Oregon area, and I don't know, maybe you're a fan of the bakery already, but, you know, stop in and say hi and tell them you heard about them on the show. That'd be fun. Anyways, great talking to you again. What can I say? I love making this show. I love bringing it to you. I love sharing it with you. I hope you enjoyed it. We've got another great chat coming up
again next week. So in the meantime, reach out whenever you like, Mark with a K at riseuppod.com. Head over to riseuppod.com and support the show. It's all funded by voluntary donations here, and every little bit helps. So I really appreciate it. If you got an extra couple of dollars, you want to buy me a coffee, you want to buy me a coffee every month, bring it on. I'd love it. Thank you. It helps a lot. Riseuppod.com, and join us at Bakers for Bakers. That's the number four, bakersforbakers.org. And continue the conversation over there. It's an online community with a couple of hundred people that all own their own little bakery. And we share ideas and talk with each other and help each other out. Hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great week. Bake lots. Stay healthy. I'll talk to you next week. Half vaccinated even. Happy baking. Bye-bye.